I want to pick up basically just one theme running behind what I'm going to say this morning. And that is that if you look at New Zealand from the point of view of workers generally, the fundamental question that has to be addressed is how are we going to cope with what I call the demographic transition? We are moving from a population structure of relatively few young people, relatively few old people, and lots of people of working age, to a population structure where there's relatively few young people, relatively few people of working age, and lots of people over 65. And I don't think that people have really as yet got their heads around the complete implications of that. Just to give you some numbers, between 2006 and 2011, we will add 63,000 people to those who are over 65. In the next 5 years, we'll add another 101,000. And then another 101,000 in the 5 years after that. And then 123,000 in the 5 years after that. So in a relatively short period of time, we're going to move to a huge level of dependency on public support. We have a situation now. I know Len Bayliss, for example, often talks about the dependency ratio as those not in work to those in work, and says it's not going to change much because you have fewer young, more old, and it's the same dependency on those in work. That, in my view, is false economics because the costs of supporting young dependents are privatised. The parents pay for their shelter, the parents pay for their clothing, the parents pay for their food. There's a little bit of public cost in their in their education and a little bit of health. But the costs of older people are largely socialised. The state meets about 70% of the standard of the cost of living of those who are over 65. And so we're moving from a not a massive shift in dependency, but from the private cost of maintaining dependency to a socialised cost of dependency. And just to give you some of the implications of that, the first implication is that it has obviously major impacts for the cost of New Zealand superannuation. But I don't think people have quite got their heads around what it means for the costs of health care. The estimates, and they're obviously subject to error, but the estimates are that someone of working age, 15 to 64, costs on average about $1,300 a year of healthcare cost. Between 65 and 74, the cost is $3,600. So it doubles. Between 75 and 84, the cost is $6,800. So it doubles again. Between, if you're 85 and over, the cost per annum of support is $13,500. So it doubles again. And if you take those 100,000 people moving through the demographics and moving from 65 to 75 to 85, you can see that the cost of supporting that cohort is doubling and doubling and doubling. And the question, I suppose, that has to be addressed is how much is enough? Now, in about 1998, I think it was the Public Health Coalition, I'm not quite sure of the name of the organisation then existing, got Brian Easton to say, give us a target for health spending. And it was going to be used in that ill-advised, and I can say that because, not just with hindsight, because I said so with foresight, attempt to have that citizens-initiated referenda on a whole series of social policy initiatives. And the referendum question on health was that we support moving to 7% of GDP as a target for health spending. And you know how campaigns work. You set an aspirational target that you know will never be achieved, because then you can constantly beat up on the government for not having achieved it. That's what campaigning is about. At the time when Easton did his calculation and bunged it into the referendum, we were spending about, depends which year you take, if you take 96-97 it's 5.5%, if you take 97-98 5.8%. We're about 5.6% of GDP we were spending on health. So what Easton was arguing as this kind of campaigning goal was that we should get a roughly 25% step change in the funding of health, and then keep it tracking with the economy. Would move along as the economy moved along, and with inflation and so on. The Ministry of Health at the same time was saying, what's going to happen to the cost of health during the demographic transition? And they came up with a number that by 2051, with technological change and medical interventions and all that sort of stuff, plus demographic change, we would need to be gearing up to spending about 8.4% of GDP on health. Now, in the 5 years, in the last 5 years, vote health has gone up by about 51% of GDP. But that number actually is not that silly, the 51% of GDP, because it's also gone from 14% of government spending to 21% of government spending. So its share of the government cake, if you like, has increased by 50%. Not of GDP, but of government spending. And I did the sums last night. And guess what? Vote Health 19, health spending in this coming financial year is 6.86% of GDP. It is bang on the Eastern target. And we haven't started the demographic transition. We are halfway to the Ministry of Health's 8.4% estimate, 6 years into that 50-year forecast. And we haven't started the demographic transition. So I think if I was to look at the message of that, is that somehow this society, if it's going to actually deal with its labour force and dependency ratio and all that that implies, is going to have to craft some type of social consensus around what's enough. Of course there's stuff out of innovation. National says we should use the private sector more. It's still money. People say, oh, we'll just drive out the bureaucrats. Well, look, you're playing at the edges. The fact of the matter is we have crafted a national consensus around retirement income. 65 at 65, even that starts to unpick because Winston Peters makes it 66. And pre-funding it through the New Zealand Superannuation Fund. We have absolutely no consensus around what we're going to do with health. And arithmetically, you cannot just keep going at this rate. You cannot increase health share of public spending by 50% every 5 or 6 years. Because you then don't have a government, you just have a health system. And if you keep going, you don't have an economy, you just have a hospital. And I think from working people's point of view, somewhere there has to be an acceptance of what's enough. Otherwise, the burden of supporting that people comes back onto an unsustainably high tax impost on the working age people. Because you simply cannot do those 13,000 a year health cost alone with a shrinking labour force as a share of your population. And the big risk is that we get into a downward spiral whereby we haven't got a social consensus. We keep pushing the politics to extract more money from the system. You keep putting that onto a shrinking working age demographic cohort, and they simply go somewhere else. They simply relocate. So the spiral intensifies. Now, if there is not this new consensus emerging, a correction will happen. You cannot. It's simply mathematically impossible to keep going. So a correction will be imposed. And my experience, long lifetime in working people's organizations, is that when those corrections are imposed, they are seldom imposed on those with the resources and those who are articulate enough to protect themselves. What Treasury used to call middle-class capture. They are imposed on the vulnerable. And the inarticulate, who can't organize, who don't have the resources, who don't have the smarts to get around the political system, don't work the jargon, don't have the slogans and the PR gloss. So I think there's a big... this budget, for me, hit Easton's unattainable target. And then the question that it poses is, well, what's next? And the answer is not more.